talking on wars we fight, driving by the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on AltRightTV.com. Also, WhiteResistanceRadio.com as well. Now, here is an interesting story. I want to thank Simon News Network for this. And this is about patient 31, and from Korea. And wanting to know where the coronavirus originates and how it spread. It's often here in Canada and the United States difficult. We're not always given the information we should have, but often it is traceable back to people who have come from Red China or have come from Iran. And these often then spread it to their families. This is patient.
It's called Patient 31.
Patient 31.
And this story comes out of South Korea.
Okay.
Patient 31.
Okay.
35-year-old Chinese woman flew into South Korea. Mm-hmm. All right. She flew into South Korea feeling absolutely fine.
Okay.
On February 6th, she was in a minor car accident in South Korea.
Okay.
She took herself to the hospital, and she was fine. No major accidents or bones broken or anything like that. However, she had a slight temperature, slight, and they wanted to test her. She said, no, I'm fine. I'm not sick. I'm fine. I want to go. She left. Okay? She then attends church. She goes to church on February 9th, and she goes to church on February 16th.
Okay.
Okay, right after that, her symptoms started to come. All right, that's a long gap between her feeling fine,
yeah,
and then the symptoms coming.
Yeah.
Doctors advise her to check immediately for the coronavirus. She gets tested, and she's got it.
Oh, man.
Just prior to the testing, she went to a hotel and had a buffet lunch.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay? So she's gone to two churches.
Yeah.
And she's now had buffet lunch at a hotel, which so many people can do.
Yeah.
Which is just a regular day. 2 days, she gets all the symptoms, and they officially make her patient 31 in South Korea.
Right.
Her alone, mm-hmm. that one person, mm-hmm. patient 31, created approximately 60% of all cases in South Korea.
60%?
60 stem from patient 31.
Who was a 35-year-old woman who said she felt fine.
Who was, yet went on with her day.
And went to all the places.
1,200 people mm-hmm. were infected who were at the church. Those two masses.
Wow.
1,200 got infected, right?
From her.
From her. Because, and then some of them went to a funeral. So infected the people at the funeral, and it was a domino effect.
Well, of course, they all have families, friends.
So out of the total 8,897 infected in South Korea, this patient 31,
yeah.
unfortunately,
yeah.
created 5,382 of those.
That just blew my mind.
That is patient 31, and that is the story that we need to understand. So if you're meeting up with your friends at home, wow. 4 or 5 of your friends are coming at home, if you were going to the parks, if you were at a beach in JBR today, and you may think, yeah, but I was doing social distancing. How did you get there? You walked, you may have touched a rail, you may have coughed, you may have done something. It takes one person.
Wow.
One person who feels absolutely fine to have it in their system and infect.
And that's the Chris Fade Show. I thought it was very interesting about that story from South Korea. I also want to thank Simon, the Simon News Network, for the following story. It's it's a little on the gross side, and it shows you the degree of degeneracy, to some extent, that there is in Europe. The Belgian health minister has put a ban on all sexual activities of 3 people or more after a coronavirus party last week turned into a 500-participant orgy that ended with 380 cases of contamination. I'll run that by you one more time. Last week, there was a coronavirus party, which became a sexual orgy. There were over 500 people there. Of these, 380 became contaminated. Wife swapping and threesomes and orgies of 6, 50, 100 or more are not permitted until the outbreak settles down, she announced in Parliament. This is the Belgian health minister. Health Minister de Blok did not ban single or two-person sexual practices such as masturbation, anal or oral sex, or even bestiality. Well, it is pretty gross, but really says something. Here is a fundraising letter from the Conservative Party of Canada. Now, I'm not a big fan of the Conservative Party of Canada anymore. I think on many issues they've sold us out consistently. However, the letter does make some good points, and it's from the Honourable Rob Moore, who's a Member of Parliament. I sincerely hope that by this time, the time this letter reaches you, the illegal blockades that have brought our country to a standstill will be over. Now, this was sent out on March the 10th. Now, the blockades of railways by Indians, by radical Indians and their environmental crazy allies, have largely become a matter of the past now with the coronavirus. But nonetheless, this is an issue that looks very, very bad on the government. Is again a result of their failure to enforce the law. Anyway, back to Rob Moore's letter. But as I write to you, there appears to be no end in sight, and Canadians are angry, scared, and very worried. But even if the blockades have ended by the time you read this, one thing is true. Our country is broken, and we need to fix it right away. If you're like me, the images of radical protesters blocking vital rail lines will be burned into your memory forever. You'll never be able to forget the placards boasting, "We will shut down Canada." And the offensive posters mocking the RCMP with red coat goons, "Fuck, back off," or in some cases, "fuck off." But just as troubling are the images of stranded commuters trying to go to work or get home to their families, stalled trains that should be carrying much needed food and supplies across our country, and empty grocery store shelves. Where I live in New Brunswick, and this is a member of Parliament, Rob Moore, where I live in New Brunswick, a serious propane shortage has left thousands of families worried about heating their homes during one of the harshest, coldest times of the year. This isn't the Canada you and I know and love. This isn't the way things are supposed to be in a country like Canada. I'm sure you've seen similar events unfold in failed states and banana republics a world away on television or the internet. I have too. But in Canada, we shouldn't have to live in fear. We shouldn't have to worry about being cut off from our own country or being forced to endure Soviet-style rationing just because the government won't stand up to far-left fringe groups. Canadians need leadership, and they need it now. Before we move forward, we need to answer a very important question to make sure our country is never hijacked again. How did we get here? The answer is simple. This crisis is a direct result of Justin Trudeau's failure to unite our country, his obsession with toxic, divisive identity politics, and his political strategy of exploiting regional divisions and pitting Canadians against each other. His record speaks for itself. Instead of offering a real climate change plan that invests in technology and holds major emitters like Red China accountable, Justin Trudeau chose to impose a carbon tax, ban oil tankers, which would be very important for getting Alberta oil overseas through British Columbia ports, and he canceled pet flights. Instead of addressing the real challenges facing Indigenous or Indian communities, like crumbling infrastructure and a lack of clean drinking water, Justin Trudeau pandered, overpromised, and underdelivered. Making matters worse, he continues to ignore the will of many Indigenous communities that support job-creating pipeline projects. He would rather appease radical activists who want to destroy our energy industry. Instead of keeping supply chains open and keeping Canadians safe, Justin Trudeau turns a blind eye to the illegal blockades that choked the life out of our economy and created dangerous, politically unstable climate that we now find ourselves in. It's time to face the facts, writes Member of Parliament Rob Moore. Even though Justin Trudeau doesn't want to admit it, this is now a law and order issue. And I'm worried that if we don't act soon, someone is going to get seriously hurt. Starting now, we must, 1, restore the rule of law in our country. 2, put public safety first. 3, ensure the radical activists responsible, many of whom have no connection to the Wet'suwet'en people, that's one of the native tribe in British Columbia, for these devastating blockades, to make sure they're brought to justice. And show the world that Canada remains a safe, stable place to invest, build, and create jobs. But you and I know that there's, he goes on to talk about the Conservative Party. Remember, the NDP is even more extreme and more dangerous than the Liberals. They're in lockstep with the radical protesters in the Shut Down Canada movement and the Bloc Québécois, those are the Quebec separatists. They will always oppose jobs, investment in our energy industry, and the responsible development of our natural resources. Only Conservatives can make things right, says Rob Moore. Well, so, of course, would Maxime Bernier's People's Party of Canada, which I support. Oh, yes, well, more of the observations about the coronavirus. A lot of businesses are making announcements, not all of them bad, of course, to do their best to contain the coronavirus. And I was impressed. I was at an airport restaurant on Saturday in Calgary called Chili's. And I was very impressed that one or another of the waiters or waitresses constantly went around and wiped down the tables with a disinfectant. Tables that had been used and so on. Before anybody could sit down at a table, not only did the plates and other things left by the previous customer have to be cleared away, but the table was wiped down with a disinfectant. Now, that was impressive. That's right. Some other businesses, not so much. In British Columbia, the procedure is with your empty wine or liquor or beer bottles, you take them to the government liquor store, and you hand them over the counter, and you get a certain refund. It's about 10 cents for a wine bottle. Well, I had some bottles where I was staying at the ranch, and I dutifully thought, well, I will, clean up after myself, and I took myself down to the BC liquor store, and there was a big sign on the door, as of the day before, we are no longer accepting returns of your empty bottles, or we're ceasing that. Because of the coronavirus outbreak. You might just as well have blamed it on the temperature in the Kalahari Desert for all the connection there is. There is no connection. And that's one of my worries, that in things big and small, and particularly where our rights are involved, the coronavirus pandemic crisis will be used by businesses and governments to curtail service and make an even meaner new normal. I was so angry at this. I really had half a mind just to smash the bottles on the sidewalk and say, look, you jerks, clean it up. I'm trying to do the responsible thing, recycle all that good stuff, and you're not accepting it. Well, why? Coronavirus. Okay, let me dig deep in my brain and try to figure out what's the connection. Well, there isn't a connection. People come in with their probably shopping bag or box of empty bottles. They place them on the counter there, make sure in British Columbia that you've taken the screw cap lid off, if there is one, and an employee, obviously wearing gloves, picks them up and tosses them into a container to be hauled off and recycled, and then plunges the cash register and hands you whatever is coming to you as a refund. You're in the store anyway. You're probably in there to buy something more. So there is that human contact. You don't have to get within 6 feet of that employee. If social distancing really is the issue, you put the bottles on the counter and step back a pace or two. The employee takes the bottles, tosses them in the container, hits the cash register, and puts your refund on the counter and steps back. You step up, take your refund. This isn't rocket science. Not much different in the province of Ontario, where the beer store, we have a near beer monopoly. Used to be called Brewers Retail, now it's called the beer store. We buy beer there, but you can return your empty bottles, both whether liquor, wine, or beer, or cans of beer, or empty cans, to the beer store. Well, I happened to be going by the beer store earlier today. And what do I notice? That's right. The no longer accepting the bottles and the bottle exchange, coronavirus. And again, there's no connection. And the procedure is roughly the same at the beer stores as it is in British Columbia at the BC liquor stores. So things are being curtailed, and the catch-all, because many people have been
frightened nearly out of their wits by the media. Many people are prepared to accept, oh, well, if you say it's coronavirus, I'll let you off the hook, or, I mean, I'll accept it. Well, we shouldn't accept, because I don't think we should accept bullshit. I don't think so. Okay, more examples. Banks are curtailing their services. Some branches are closed, and so if you want to deal with that bank, other than through the banking machines, you have to go to a branch that is still open. And those branches are curtailing their hours. The Toronto Dominion Bank probably has the best consumer hours in Canada, of the big five in Canada. And they're open, if memory serves correctly, 10 to 4 on Sunday. I believe 10 to 6 on Sunday, on Saturday. And I believe 10 to 8 on most weekdays, on all weekdays. Well, I passed the TD Bank on Sunday, and they're closed. And there's new hours, and the hours, I think, are 10 to 6. Well, that's not that bad, but I was in such a bank today, and they're on the floor with what I took to be a masking tape were little X's. And I guess these are to kind of direct you as you go in, if there's going to be a queue or lineup to see a teller, you stand near one of these X's, and it's about 6 feet to the next one. So in other words, customers are not bunching up. Okay, so far so good, that makes sense. So I was dealing with an official in the bank, and I said, you know, assuming you get the same, roughly the same number of clients or customers, by reducing hours, what you're doing is forcing more people into the same limited space, which is one of the things that you want to avoid during the coronavirus epidemic. And he agreed with me. And then he said, well, you know, it's even worse. We've closed several branches in the neighborhood, and the staff, or some of the staff, is over here. And I thought, well, so what you've got is a further concentration of people when you should be trying to reduce that concentration as much as possible. Okay, I go then I go to a favorite market of mine, and I discovered Sunday, they're always open Sundays, limited hours, I think it's 10 to 6, but they're open 7 days a week. Well, I got there, and I didn't realize that they will not be open on Sundays. Okay. And then they have rather restrictive hours, 8 in the morning to 5 at night. Usually their hours during the week are 8 to 7:30. That 5 o'clock cutoff makes it hard for people who have 9-to-5 jobs to shop. You get the point, unless you work very close by and can nip out during your lunch hour. Anyway, I made the same argument there. Well, look, assuming your customer volume remains about the same, by shortening your hours and taking out Sunday shopping, you're likely to concentrate people in your store more. And that's the opposite of what you want to be doing. You know, it's a relatively small store. It's not a huge supermarket. And if there's a lot of customers in there, they're close to each other, and you know the way customers are. You're shopping, you're looking around for a product, and in some cases, even in this market, which is quite well stocked, they're not there. Things are changing. There was, for instance, no this Lysol wipes, which are good things to wipe, to sanitize surfaces. Well, they're gone. What about a jar of Javex? Well, they're all gone. So, okay, you're looking around, you're interacting perhaps with store people, you're touching things, and you're not always conscious of whether there's another person, you know, closer than 6 feet to you. So my argument there was the same as being at the liquor store, or with the liquor store. By curtailing your hours, you're tending to concentrate more people. Well, I brought that up to an employee, and this is not the manager, so this is not the official word. But I made what I think is a very logical a point. This was the answer. Well, people shouldn't really be shopping. They should be at home. And I thought about that. Even in Italy, which is in near complete lockdown, people are still allowed to go out to buy, to shop for food, allowed to go to drugstores for medicine, and to get exercise or recreation in their neighborhood, like walk around the block. And I thought about the answer, how profoundly stupid it was. People should not be shopping here, they should be at home. Ideally, if they can, they should be at home. But they have to shop. I mean, groceries are important. Everybody in the system agrees with that. Well, if for some reason people stopped shopping at that market for groceries, this woman who made that comment to me would be out of a job, right? It doesn't make any sense. And I fear that with an already stupefied population, you know, we've been browbeaten into not thinking by cultural Marxism and political correctness, you know, just regurgitate the party line, don't think. Our education system, especially in our colleges and in the arts, is really an indoctrination system, not an education system. People are not encouraged to think. And it profoundly disturbs me that at a time when we need to be able to think and be on our guard, yes, be on our guard for the coronavirus, of course, but also that this does not get hijacked as a way to take away some vital people rights. And there are many theories out there, and I'll be quite frank with you, I don't have a final opinion about this coronavirus. I don't deny that there's something out there, that to some extent it's real. It would appear that what it is has come from China. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is quite right when he calls it the Wuhan virus. And President Trump calls it the Chinese virus. And when challenged on that, says, it's not racist, it comes from China. And put a different way, rather than saying it's not racist, I like the construction that Jared Taylor uses, and that's race realism. Race is a factor. Race is a reality. And this is just race realism. Well, I was sent two short videos that are stomach-churning, but very well worth reporting. And these videos show food practices that occur in China. In one case, a woman is spooning what looks like tadpoles into her, my guess would be, two-year-old child's mouth. She's got a spoon, and she's got holding a bowl, and it's relatively clear water, and there are these things swimming around that look like tadpoles. They probably are tadpoles. And she catches one with her spoon and spoons the tadpole and some water into the kid's mouth. It beautifully swallows, and she captures another one, the same thing. I think the person who sent it to me said, this is the reason the viruses leap from the human kingdom. I mean, sorry, from the animal kingdom to the human kingdom. I mean, eating live tadpoles, for heaven's sake. Well, then there's another scene. A cocky, arrogant-looking young man is strolling through some sort of a market where there are live frogs. He takes a frog, bends back its head, and proceeds to eat what would appear to be the brains and part of the frog. It's quite a large frog. I would say a bullfrog. And it's beyond disgusting. It's raw, of course. You're usually urged, with a few exceptions, to cook meat, the cooking process kills a lot of germs and bacteria. This frog is eaten raw. Not only is it disgusting, and you could always say, oh, well, that's just a matter of taste. No, okay, fair enough. This is one of the reasons that this coronavirus, just like its predecessor, SARS, and its predecessor, H1N1, the bird flu, and farther back, the Spanish flu, and farther back, the bubonic plague, all came out of China. It's a cesspit of disease. And who are flying in and out of... at least not on Air Canada. We have large numbers of Chinese people coming to Canada and the United States and Europe. That's part of globalism. And it's not just bad for your health, it could be lethal. Canada First Immigration Reform Committee, we have had a newsletter now for going back nearly 30 years called the Canadian Immigration Hotline. And we have a regular feature there called Health Watch, where we look at the pernicious effects of poorly screened immigration on our healthcare system. And some years ago, actually quite a number of years ago, I would say, actually 30, boy, time flies, we had a slogan which we've kept around called Immigration Can Kill You. You know, immigration can literally kill you. Poorly screened immigration has brought some pretty horrible diseases to this country and to the United States. Immigration can kill you. Now, of course, that got me into a lot of trouble when I was still employed as an English instructor, even though this had nothing to do with actions in the classroom or anything like that. But it was held against me, and you see, oh, what a horrible person I was, saying immigrants are killers. That's not exactly what we're saying. We're saying that that poorly screened immigration can kill you, and when this all sorts out, it will turn out that a good deal of this coronavirus, initial appearances in Canada, were due to travel from China. Mostly by people who had been immigrants, who were visiting back home. Here is a fascinating fact that was brought to my attention by Dr. James Sanchez. And the Israel, we haven't heard a lot about Israel in this coronavirus issue. Partly because there's been, you know, mostly focus on the United States and Canada and our local coverage. But other countries have it, and Israel has it quite bad. Israel coronavirus cases jumped to 945
and the country records its first coronavirus 19 death. And Dr. Sanchez points out, did you realize that the outbreak in Israel is not so far off from the scale of that in Iran? In Iran, there are 21,000 cases. We're talking probably of Sunday. In Israel, there are 1,000, give or take. But Iran has 15 times the population of Israel. Also, the outbreak in Iran is mature. But that in Israel is just starting. So Iran has 15 times the population. So if it had the same proportion of its population infected, it would have, as Israel, it would have about 15,000, it had 21,000. So Iran is seems to have had more cases, a few more cases per capita. But Israel's nearly 1,000 is very significant. Dr. Sanchez goes on to point out, also the outbreak in Iran is mature, but that in Israel is just starting. I suspect, and this is Dr. Sanchez says, the Israeli outbreak will exceed the rate in Iran, although with a better health system, there'll probably be fewer deaths. But that's kind of interesting. That's another thing you want to take into, factor in as we try to figure out, are we being trolled the truth? I'm not saying we're not. But we do know the government lies. Are we being told part of the partial truth? Now, that there are people on the internet who have said the coronavirus is being caused by Jews to do bad things to us. I'm not saying that's not possible, but you know, in trying to figure out what's happening, you've got to throw this into the into your factor this into your thinking as well. An excellent piece which I'm putting out as a gram, and incidentally, if you'd like to receive my grams, these are emails I put out. Usually, they're stories. If you'd like to receive them, just email me, paul@paulfromm.com. That's P-A-U-L at P-A-U-L-F-R-O-M-M.com. And this is, of course, a real Canadian scandal. There's a viral pandemic. The Canada-U.S. border is essentially closed unless you cross illegally, in which case, hashtag welcome to Canada. Now, the border is closed with some exceptions. Commercial traffic continues. So, Canada, of course, there's about $1.4 billion daily trade between the two countries. We make parts that are required for the assemblies of autos in the United States and vice versa. We import a lot of food through the United States from California and from Mexico. So the commercial travel will continue, and sensibly so. But tourism, or non-essential travel, I think I'll drop down to Buffalo and do some shopping. Well, that's not going to be happening for at least for the next 2 weeks. Anyway, that's kind of the explanation or footnote to the Canada-U.S. border is closed. Yeah, closed, but not entirely. This is a thought piece by Madeline Weld. Oops, if anyone was thinking of sneaking over the Canada-U.S. border at Wroxham Road, that's the crossing in Quebec, they just missed their chance. Wroxham Road is closed as of Saturday, March 21st. But those who would flout the law can take heart. The government says it's only going to be temporary before Canadians again foot the bill for illegal migrants. And maybe also pay for their health care. Well, we will be. We will be. No doubt about it. Maybe you haven't heard of Wroxham Road. That wouldn't be too surprising because the media have been disgracefully quiet about it. Wroxham Road has been the entry point of over 55,000 illegal migrants since January 2017. Accommodating and processing them is going to cost the Canadian taxpayers over $1 billion. people come to Canada illegally and impose these costs on us simply because the government refuses to enforce the law and secure the border. It's an open field. Well, it's a road across through an open field. Oh, what can we do? What can we do? Viktor Orban in Hungary, a much poorer country than Canada, he figured it out fast. Build a fence, a big tall fence. And just in case some enterprising scamster decides he's going to try to climb over the fence, you've got gendarmes on this side, ready with clubs or water cannon or tear gas to beat them back. But no, they're not getting in. Anyway, back to Madeleine Wells' commentary. Their bogus claims will tie up Immigration and Refugee Board for many years, and they will likely never be removed, even if their asylum claims are rejected in 2 or 3 years. Roxham Road runs through a decommissioned border crossing between New York State and Quebec, near the town of La Colle. By crossing illegally and claiming refugee status, these migrants bypass the Safe Third Country Agreement between the United States and Canada, under which asylum seekers are required to ask for asylum in the first safe country they enter. So if these foreigners have come to the United States and they want to make a refugee claim, they've got to make it in the U.S. And similarly, people who come to Canada, land in Canada, they want to make a refugee claim, cannot skedaddle down to the States. They've got to make it in Canada. The Roxham Road border hoppers, whom the government likes to call irregular migrants, know that their refugee claim would be rejected outright at a port of entry, that the process of legal immigration can take a long time, and that by cheating, they have a pretty good chance of staying in Canada. Roxham Road became the premier irregular entryway into Canada after Trudeau sent out his infamous virtue signaling hashtag Welcome to Canada tweet after U.S. President Trump's executive order of January 2017 to restrict travel from various countries for national security reasons, nicknamed the Muslim ban. This tweet, heard around the world, unleashed a massive influx. That's Trudeau's tweet. Although various remedies to close this loophole, such as declaring the entire border a port of entry, which would make sense, were proposed by the Conservatives and others, Trudeau's government did nothing. That's right, they just continued to allow the illegals to flood in. Even when it became obvious that people were flying to New York from places like Nigeria, taking a taxi to the border and then walking into Canada, the government remained intransigent. It seemed as if the RCMP were at the border mainly to help the migrants with their luggage. And there are numerous pictures of Mounties carrying the bags for obviously kind of well-dressed illegals. As the inflow continues, shelters first in Montreal and later in Toronto and elsewhere became overloaded to such an extent that the irregular migrants were sometimes housed in hotels. And that was before the coronavirus pandemic. One of the big worries about the COVID-19 is that it will make so many people ill, it will overburden the hospitals beyond their capacity to provide adequate care, as happened in Italy. It is to stem transmission in the early stages that we are being asked to self-isolate as much as possible. The businesses are temporarily shutting down, that schools, recreational facilities, theaters, and libraries are closing, and that many restaurants are going takeout only. In response to the pandemic, Trudeau announced that Canada would deny entry to anyone except Canadian citizens and permanent residents, U.S. citizens, diplomats, and flight crews. And he was very clear that if you were a traveling Canadian, you better get back here fast or you might not get in. On March 18th, Trudeau announced that the U.S. and Canada had agreed to stop all non-essential travel across the border and did not discount the possibility of implementing the Emergencies Act to restrict travel within Canada and even to implement a countrywide lockdown. So surely he closed off Roxham Road, right? Not a chance. Even as the headlines scream closing the gates and Trudeau expresses concern about the spread of the virus, he himself was in self-isolation after his wife had tested positive for it, he did nothing to keep people out from streaming in at Roxham Road. As documented by Rebel News journalist Ken Bexty. The only thing the government was going to do was to quarantine the migrants and the illegals for 14 days. Now, that was the word on Thursday. After that, it seems, we were simply to believe that every one of the people who ignored the Do Not Cross sign at Roxham Road would take the official guidelines about self-isolation to heart should they experience any symptoms. And this despite not knowing where they were coming from or where they'd been. And that's part of the joy of being illegal. We can only hope that none of the over 1,000 people who have entered since January of this year, or any of those who entered before, were exposed to the virus at some large public gathering, such as a prayer meeting in Bangladesh. Of course, it would be churlish to think that anyone would illegally cross the border just to benefit from free Canadian health care as they wait for the case to be adjudicated. Yeah, that would be most unfair, wouldn't it? But true! Why would Trudeau so recklessly leave a gaping hole in Canada's safety measures in the face of the pandemic? Perhaps he hoped that those among the illegal border crossers who remain in Canada will become loyal voters for the Liberal Party. This could also be why he ramped up recently high levels of immigration to the stratospheric 350,000 annually that it is this year, with no end in sight. Perhaps Trudeau is simply implementing his vision of a post-national Canada, as he told the New York Times shortly after his election in 2015, and applying the global compact on migration in his own way. The United Nations Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration deserves a bulletin of its own as a reminder of its disastrous implications for Canada. Under conditions of a pandemic, it would more accurately be called the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration of Viruses. Why would the media not raise a ruckus about this situation? Why were there no headlines screaming dozens of unvetted migrants illegally cross at Roxham Road each day while Canada's borders are closed, supposedly? Perhaps the obvious answer is what's being called Trudeau's media bailout, the provision of $600 million to select media over 5 years, officially called tax credits and incentives. The Global Compact urges governments to stop allocation of public funding to media outlets that promote intolerance, xenophobia, racism, and other forms of discrimination toward migrants. In other words, a Canada or a Canada First policy. And nothing says racist and xenophobe like someone who questions the Liberal government's immigration policies or its refusal to stop illegal entry into Canada and non-ports of entry like Roxham Road. The miracle of miracles on March 20th, things are moving really fast. Trudeau announced that the illegal entry point at Roxham Road would be closed. Did he finally see the light? Or was it political pressure, such as the reports from rebel media and a petition by Conservative Member of Parliament and Conservative leadership candidate Aaron O'Toole that finally prodded him to act? As one Facebook poster who calls herself Marlene Crandallmeyer believes that it was Trump who closed Roxham Road at the request of Canadians. I don't know where Marlene got her information or if it's accurate, but if the U.S. border reopens when the pandemic has subsided and if Trudeau again allows the illegal inflow at Roxham Road, it will be worth sending the U.S. president a petition to close it again. Lord knows what we do if there should be an open borders president in the White House. A very, very good comment. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side. I mean, you're on alrighttv.com. I'm going to take my relatively short musical break tonight and play something a little bit more cheerful, some German beer drinking music. And we can still drink beer, but not in pubs in Canada now. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Bye. Paul Froman. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com and AltRightTV.com.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here made to wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless.